Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Hard Shoulder
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
We're going to be starting this hour talking about grief. It's all something that we have experienced, and it was pushed into the spotlight in the last couple of days when Scotland player Andy Robertson was interviewed immediately after his country had qualified for the World Cup on Tuesday night. Let's have a listen.
Today I've been in bits. I know that the age of Matt and everything, this could be my last chance of World Cup. I couldn't get my mate Diogo Jota out of my head today. We spoke so much together about the World Cup. He missed out in Qatar because of injury, I missed out. But Scotland never went, and we always discussed what it'd be like going to this World Cup. And I know he'll be somewhere smiling over me today. I just couldn't get him out of my head the whole day, so I was in a bit of trouble in my room earlier. But like I said, I think I hit it well off the boys, and I'm just so glad it's ended up this way.
And that was Andy Robertson talking about his friend Diogo Jota, who obviously passed away in the last year. And to chat to me about the grief process, I'm joined by the founder of Shapes of Grief, grief educator and psychotherapist Liz Gleeson. Liz, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Two things struck me about that. One was sort of the dichotomy, and I think a lot of people might relate to this, of he's there at this utterly joyous moment, and what he's thinking about is his friend who they talked about and who passed away, and having this really sad personal moment while the music is blaring and the celebrations are going on. And the other thing was when he said, "I was in trouble today, but I hid it well from the lads." And that just kind of really hit a chord that so many times we're trying to hide this.
Yeah. And he started off the interview by saying, "I was in bits today," desperately trying to hide his emotions. And it's a completely normal, natural process. Somebody he loved has died, somebody he was very close to, somebody he clearly had dreams with, who died suddenly and unexpectedly. Of course, we're going to grieve. Anybody would. But I think, as you said, highlighting the fact that I had to hide it from the lads. You know, grief for women can be difficult, but I think for men, it's even more difficult. We tend to disenfranchise men's grief because culturally we have this notion that men need to be strong. Boys don't cry. We've all heard that one. We grew up with it. But it is just cultural. It's not biological. There is absolutely no biological reason why a man cannot fall to his knees and express emotion the way a woman often would. Mm. And equally, there's many women who hide it also, or who cope with grief in a different way. Like, we have different grieving styles that aren't necessarily related to gender. You know, we can either be quite expressive and emotive and want to talk about it. We call that an intuitive grieving style. Or there's people who are instrumental. I want to solve a problem, build something, grow something, make something. And culturally, we expect men to be instrumental. And culturally, we expect women to be intuitive. But the woman who's instrumental, who doesn't express her grief, is seen as hard and cold. And equally, the man who's emotional can be seen as not holding it together. Mm. You know, so even though we'd all debate this, but the reality is we worry about men being emotional, even though it's completely natural.
Yeah. Does that come down to parenting, really, then? Because like you say, if you get a 3-year-old boy or girl, they're going to bawl their eyes out if something happens to them, something sad. So at what point does that kind of become trained out of us? It's probably not one specific point, but it's maybe more just an accumulation of society, as much as the parents saying something like, "Big boys don't cry."
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's cultural, to be honest. Like, people often, when they're talking about grief, they immediately make a face. They go, "Ooh, how do you do that work? Is it not really hard?" You know, I've heard the word grief and negativity in the same sentence. So we really misunderstand it. Like, you were sort of in a toxic positivity culture where everything's about growth and productivity and being joyful and, you know, living our best lives and being our best selves. But, you know, whole seasons of wintering and grieving and being indoors and feeling low is actually quite a normal part of being human. Mm. It isn't if we stay there, but there are periods in our lives where we have to pull in and be quiet and be less social and tend to what's happening in our lives and what's happening internally. But we tend culturally to judge that as there's something wrong.
Mm. There's probably also an element of degrees of separation with this as well. Like, he obviously was a very good friend to Diogo Jota and a teammate of his. And you mightn't expect him to store up that grief for someone like that. You might expect that with a parent, say, or with a close sibling. But we tend to kind of think if you're one or two places removed, you recover more quickly.
Yeah, this is really interesting. But I think the way we grieve depends on our attachment, right? So there's plenty of people who won't grieve a parent because they don't have a particularly strong attachment to them, you know, and there's others, of course, who would be devastated. So it's not like if it's a parent, then we grieve this way. If it's a friend or a neighbour, it's different. What depends on the relationship we had with them. And for many of us, like working with colleagues or in certain friendships, they're the people we see all day, every day, or spend the most time with. And, you know, I don't know what their relationship was like, but from that clip, we can certainly hear they had hopes together. They had dreams together. Mm-hmm. They spent time speaking. So an attachment is formed, you know, and therefore when that person dies, especially when it's suddenly and tragically and unexpected, the shock is immense. And I think, you know, when it's somebody who's a contemporary around our own age, it's not just grief, but it's also maybe a bit of an existential crisis. Wow, that could have been me. Or what's life about if it can be snubbed out in an instant? And there's a real adaptation process that we have to go through. Grief isn't just sadness. It's not just this thing has happened in March 2023 and, you know, now it's 2 years later and I'm fine. Grief is an emotion we all have from birth to death, with the volume up and down on it, depending on what's happened. And then grieving is the way we psychologically, physiologically and emotionally, maybe even spiritually, adapt to the world again after somebody who was close to us died.
Is there a correct way to grieve, or is that a fundamentally unhealthy way to think about grieving?
It's so different for everybody. We all cope differently. And, you know, every person grieves differently and every person grieves every loss differently as well. And there's so many processes that we have to go through. There isn't right or wrong. Like, only you know what will work for you. And only I know what will work for me, because essentially it's a meaning making process. How do I make meaning out of the world now without this person that I loved? So there is no prescription. Like, there's no stages of grief. There isn't a beginning, a middle and an end. You know, people often find this analogy helpful. It's almost like an amputation. You know, you had an amputation there 6 months ago. Are you over it now? Mm. Like, of course not. You know, your life is about adapting to this. You're never over it, but you will get used to it. You'll learn to carry it better. You'll learn to walk in different ways. You'll pull in the supports and aids you need. And I suppose when someone we love dies, it's like an emotional, it's an attachment amputation. And we experience that emotionally, physically and psychologically.
Yeah. And like you say, it is so different for so many people. I mean, I know people who have moved on almost straight away. I know people who have felt nothing for a year and then it's hit them like a bus, and people who've just buried it entirely. So when you're interacting with somebody, could be a friend, it could be in the workplace or whatever, and you know they've gone through a loss or they're grieving something, is there a best way to approach that? Because like you say, you don't know what, they could be in bits, they could be not wanting to talk about it, they might want to spill their heart to you. So how do you, as someone trying to be supportive, approach that?
And again, isn't it different for every single person? Because there's some people who might say, don't come near me. I don't want to talk about it. Work is my safe place where I can be away from my feelings. And then there's somebody else who feels so lonely and isolated because nobody at work came up to them. Mm. So it's really about sort of listening in to the cues, you know. It is, like I said, so different for everyone. But definitely there are things that irk people, such as the typical euphemisms. Isn't it great that they didn't suffer, or he's in a better place, or, you know, you're so strong, or he wouldn't want you to be sad. All of these things are very reductive. What we do know, like when someone's had a really significant loss, it's their world as they knew it. Their world as they knew it is gone. Mm. The world that's going to become in the future hasn't yet arrived. So they're in this liminal space. Everything is different. Nothing feels secure. When someone is your whole world, your spouse or your child, and that person dies, your whole world is different. Your whole world has changed. And we're not like an app on a phone. You can press a button, update it, got it. We actually have to go through loss again and again and again, forgetting they've died sometimes and then remembering and feeling the pain of that. So we have to go through significant psychological processes to adapt. So it's to bear in mind that this person may, if they've been in a, had a significant loss, may be in this liminal in-between space. And in that space, we can feel quite vulnerable, quite unsure of ourselves. I mean, we heard, you know, our Andy in the clip, I was in trouble today. Like, basically what I'm interpreting is he was grieving and he did not know where to put his grief, how to express it, what to do with it. It felt like he had lost control and was falling apart. And if only someone could say to him, this is a normal, natural response, let it happen. But actually his suffering came from the panic of it, trying to hide it, trying to put it away, feeling like there was something wrong with that.
And almost being sort of the flip side of joy as well. Like he was having this joyous moment professionally. And the first thought was, God, you know, Diogo would love this.
Completely. And you know what? This is so timely being at the end of November, because I was just writing an article today for the suicide bereavement charity HUG about grief at Christmas time. And it's almost like the more joy, the deeper we feel the pain. So following a bereavement, Christmas can be so difficult. A wedding can be so painful. A celebration of anything, because their absence is so keenly felt. And you've said it so beautifully there, the joy of the game. And why the hell isn't he here?
Yeah. Briefly, as we're just bang up against time, but you're running a research project at the moment about processing grief.
Yeah, like I'm so excited about this because grief is not the problem. How we deal with grief is the problem. And in our busy, productive, happy culture, we don't make space for grief. So my PhD research is about bringing people into the forest, into nature, away from needing to be productive or needing to achieve anything, just into a space in nature where time is geographical. You know, it's geological. There isn't a clock, and just where people can tend to that grief, that meaning-making process, that expression of grief if they need to, without having to be or do anything other than how they're feeling in the moment. So that'll happen next March to May. And if anybody's interested, they can just send me an email to liz.gleeson@tus.ie.
And we'll be fascinated to hear the outcomes of that on the other side of it as well. Liz, thanks so much for coming into studio. Some of your texts, 087-1400-106 is the WhatsApp. The worst thing a person can say is it's all part of a divine plan. I tend to agree with that texter. And another saying, amazing that Robertson got such coverage for this. It says something about society that some are so shocked that he talked openly about grief.
The Hard Shoulder
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.